presented by Groundwork Collaborative.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Playbook co-author Ryan Lizza. It's Tuesday, June 4th, and here's what's driving the day. In Wilmington, Delaware, in the Hunter Biden trial, jury selection is finished, and opening statements are set to begin this morning. On the Hill today, Merrick Garland will testify before the House Judiciary Committee at 10 a.m., and this is going to be something to watch. We obtained some excerpts of Garland's opening statement, and it's safe to say that this will be the most pointed response from the Attorney General to his Republican critics that we have seen. So the quick backstory here is that originally this was a hearing to be focused on Merrick Garland's alleged contempt of Congress. House Republicans wanted to vote on that and hold Garland in contempt for failing to hand over the video of special counsel Robert Hur's interview with President Biden in the Biden docs case. So remember all that? Well, the contempt of Congress vote fell apart because Republicans don't have the votes to support it. And since this hearing was scheduled, a number of issues sort of related to the Department of Justice have become much more top of mind to House Republicans, including threats to defund the special counsel's office. And remember what happened in the Mar-a-Lago docs case recently when some boilerplate language related to the search of Mar-a-Lago was revealed in some court documents down there. And it became this very inflammatory debate about whether the Department of Justice, as Donald Trump alleged, was trying to assassinate him. Well, Garland is going to be speaking out on all of those issues this morning. He's going to describe the contempt issue as something in a long line of attacks on the Justice Department's work. And his sort of list here is threats to defund particular department investigations, most recently the special counsel's prosecution, false claims that a jury verdict in a state trial brought by a local district attorney was somehow controlled by the Justice Department, which he's going to call a conspiracy theory. Individual career agents and prosecutors being singled out for just doing their jobs, baseless and extremely dangerous falsehoods being spread about the FBI's law enforcement operations. That last one is a reference to this Mar-a-Lago issue. And heinous threats of violence being directed at the Justice Department's career public servants. So what was once something about contempt is going to be a big fight about all of these other issues. And Merrick Garland is going to be a lot feistier than we've seen him previously. Now, throw into all of this a letter that Playbook obtained last night from three of the House Judiciary Committee subcommittee chairs, Representatives Andy Biggs, Chip Roy, and Tom Massey. They threw in a new issue last night. They sent a letter to Garland and said they wanted him to give them a full accounting of what's happened to every prosecution of a January 6th defendant. And in this letter, they made a very inflammatory claim. They said, other investigations have pointed to the FBI's possible involvement in facilitating the events of January 6th. Now, there's no evidence for that, but they are raising this, and you're going to see some fireworks this morning. After weeks of debate inside the administration, this afternoon, Joe Biden is going to sign an executive order that will allow him to shut down the U.S.-Mexican border. Joining me now to talk about that is White House reporter Maya Ward, who has been closely covering the details of this debate. Good morning, Maya.
Good morning.
Okay, so what's happening today?
Well, it's a big day. We've been talking about this for what feels like ages now, since February, when we saw that first bipartisan border deal fail. And so we're expecting the president to sign this, long anticipated executive order. It's basically going to use a section of the Immigration and Nationality Act to dramatically curtail migrants' ability to seek asylum at the southern border. And so once daily crossings hit an average of about 2,500 in between ports of entry, I've had some sources saying that number could actually be lower. It's going to give the president this ability to shut down asylum requests in between ports of entry. It's worth noting, though, that asylum claims are still going to be processed at official ports of entry under the order. And so right now we see the Biden administration processing roughly 1,500 migrants a day, mostly people who have an appointment via their CBP One smartphone app.
What's the status, Maya, of border crossings right now?
Yeah, we're at roughly 3,500 a day. So, I mean, this is going to give President Biden the ability to shut down the border as soon as he signs this, basically. I'm hearing that it's going to go into effect at midnight.
So, Maya, you talked about the threshold of crossings before the so-called shutdown happens. And that number has been obviously very controversial in this debate. During the bipartisan talks over the border security bill, that was really seized on the number of crossings that were allowed. And you reminded me before we came on that was 4,000. That was really seized on by the right to scuttle the bill. And you have been reporting extensively on the debate over that number. As you said, it's unclear where Biden will settle today. But is that sort of the key, you know, inside the White House and at DHS, is that sort of the key metric that has been hotly debated among Biden and his advisors?
Yeah, I mean, even the last few weeks, I had my sources telling me that it was going to be that 4,000 number that was in that bipartisan border deal. I had others saying it might be a little bit higher, around 4,500. But it seems like, you know, administration officials are really zeroing in on this lower average because they're trying to get ahead of that criticism that we saw around that bipartisan border deal, with Republicans, you know, essentially saying that the president was, you know, inviting 4,000 migrants into the country, essentially. So they're trying to get out ahead of that.
Maya, you wrote this week that it's unclear how successful this proposed executive order will be operationally or politically. Let's talk about both of those things. Let's start with operationally.
So immigration policy experts who follow this issue closely, they're warning that it's really going to do little to actually resolve the crisis at the border. Even with this new policy from the president, you know, smugglers, traffickers, they're going to try to continue to target nationalities like Cubans and Colombians and Venezuelans who can't easily be removed to countries that haven't consistently accepted deportation flights or, you know, from the U.S. or Mexico. And so these triggered border shutdowns that are, you know, tied to this specific metric, whatever that might be, is going to essentially lead to more erratic surges at the border in desolate areas and, you know, could threaten Border Patrol's security posture is what they're concerned about.
All right. And then politically, we haven't talked about the politics at all, but this has been a fraught issue for President Biden. What's your political analysis of how this might play out? And which of your sources are sort of the most outraged about what Biden's doing here?
Definitely the progressives and immigration advocates. They're frustrated. They feel like this policy in particular is, you know, coming out of the Trump playbook.
Which is kind of true or that's not fair.
It is true. I mean, Trump relied on this policy heavily, you know, to shape the immigration system. And so there's a ton of concern about, you know, where does this put Democrats, you know, in negotiations on the issue of immigration in the future? Is this going to be the new starting point? But then, you know, you have vulnerable Democrats as well and moderates who they want to see something done on this issue, and they want this message going into November, as does the White House. I mean, his senior aides are incredibly concerned about how voters are viewing this issue. And they think just that, you know, showing that the president is taking action, that he's doing something, especially with what we saw happen in Congress, not once, but twice, that it is going to reap electoral benefits. I think the question is, how does this translate to voters? Are they paying attention? Do they see this action from the White House, you know, as an effective step to address this crisis? And how does the White House message this? Because they're going to have to, you know, also get that message out in the coming months.
Maya, you have been the best reporter on this issue, and I really appreciate you breaking this down for us.
Thanks for having me.
And for your schedule today, the Senate and the House are in. And this evening, President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden host the White House Congressional Picnic. I'm Ryan Lizza. Thanks for listening.
Our tax code isn't fair, and it's time to fix it. For too long, the tax code has been slanted towards the wealthy and large corporations. As a result, the economy and our country has suffered. The expiration of key provisions of the Trump tax law in 2025 is a rare opportunity to reform the tax code to make it fair, raise revenue, and support equitable economic growth.